Wait for it.
There's no need to wait, geeks. We are back. This is the Active Geek Podcast with your host Jim and Chuck, and this is our Jurassic World Dominion review, because the final chapter of the Jurassic Park double trilogy is upon us. We saw it. This could be the end of the franchise, probably should be the end of the franchise. We're going to share our opinions on it. We're going to spoil it. But before we get into that, Chuck, I don't know if you saw this, but legendary comic book artist Tim Sale passed away today.
I did not know that.
He is most known for a lot of Batman stuff. So yeah. The Long Halloween, Dark Victory, Madness Legend of the Dark Knight, and the Halloween special. So that's just a very, very few of what he's done. But he passed away. I know we just lost another voice actor. A lot of people are passing away in our industry, which is absolutely devastating. But I have some picks of the week, and I have two. And I think you're going to pick this one up because you are a born-again wrestling fan.
Yes. That is a good description.
And this one is called Do a Powerbomb, and it's written and drawn by Daniel Warren Johnson. And if you're thinking, Jim, that name sounds very familiar, it's because he's the creator of Murder Falcon, one of my picks of the week many, many moons ago.
But he had back. That poster on the back of your door for the longest time.
I still have it. I love that. Love that book. But he also did Wonder Woman Dead Earth for the Black Label, and now he is launching a brand new limited series, and it's called Do a Powerbomb. Lona Steel Rose wants to be a professional wrestler, but she's living under the shadow of her mother, the best to ever do it. Everything changes when a wrestling-obsessed necromancer asks her to join the grandest pro wrestling tournament of all time, which is also the most dangerous. It's the wrestler meets Dragon Ball Z in a tale where the competitors get more than they ever bargained for. So think Mickey Rourke meets James Marsters. Are you going to pick up this book? It's from Image.
I don't know. When I go there this week and they have it and I look at it and I like the art, I probably will, just because it sounds ridiculous. Like, it sounds like you said Dragon Ball Z, but to me it sounds like Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to like the art. Daniel Warren Johnson's an acquired taste in terms of artists. There's a lot of chaos in his work. So it either works for a lot of people or it doesn't work for anybody. So just Google images of Wonder Woman Dead Earth and just go from there. But that is an absolute monster of a book. Just thinking about Dragon Ball Z meets The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke and Aunt May. So I'm very, I was very curious about it. We're recording this post Wednesday, so I went and picked it up, and it's something. It is, it lives up to all the hype. And I will piggyback on that and say that Dark Universe or Dark Crisis, what I recommended last week, is a banger of a book. So I highly recommend everybody to go pick that up and subscribe to it at your local comic book shop. And if you don't have one, Crossroads in Pittman, New Jersey is a great comic book shop to visit. But I got my second pick of the week. And a few weeks ago, I said, when was the last time you picked up a Captain America series, number one? And you were like, Jim, it's been a while since he's gotten a number one series. And I was like, yeah, Chuck, it has been a while. Well, guess what, Chuck? He's got a second one. And this time it's called Captain America: Sentinel of Liberty. And it's written by Colin Kelly with art from Carmen Carnero. The shield isn't what you think. It's not your symbol. It's theirs. The shield is one of the most iconic images in the world. It stands for hope, justice, and the protection of the innocent. It also holds a secret, undiscovered until now, that will change the way Steve Rogers views the 20th century and how he chooses to fight in the 21st. Nothing is what it appears in this game-changing Captain America run by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly from Kang the Conqueror and Stormbreaker, which is, it's pretty much like the Rookie of the Year artist to look for in terms of Marvel. Carmen Carnero from Miles Morales, Spider-Man, and Captain Marvel, and Star. You going to pick this one up? This is a Steve Rogers book, not a Sam Wilson book. Are you going to pick this one up even though you picked up the Sam Wilson book back then?
Maybe. I haven't been there in a while, so I got to see what my books look like, my book situation, and I don't know if I want need, you know, I don't know if my wallet's going to like me picking up anymore, but...
Yeah, well, my wallet doesn't like Wednesdays at all. I feel like I pick up comics and fill up my gas tank every single Wednesday, and by Thursday, I'm broke. So, you know, I'm a little more picky on my picks of the week and what I'm subscribing to. I'm back to, you know, I'm going to give you two issues, and if I don't like it, even if it's a continuation, I'm moving on. But I will tell you, I am reading everything that James Tynan IV is writing.
Yeah, I got several books of his right now.
He just put out, about 3 months ago, the Sandman Universe Nightmare Country, which mm-hmm. is like based off the Corinthian, which is absolutely phenomenal, where it's got eyes, teeth for eyes. It's amazing. But that's not what we're here to talk about. I'd love to get him on the show, so maybe one day. We're here actually to spoil a movie that came out that I believe made our top tens for most anticipated movie this year, and that's Jurassic World Dominion. And yeah. Full spoilers to follow. A movie that when it was first released, the early reactions were, this is the worst of the franchise. And it was sitting at like a 38% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's at a 71% now. So it's like, that's a huge climb, you know, almost double from where it was previously. But this is something that my tagline for this movie as we go into it is, this is a movie that when we talk about a trailer ruining a movie, this is a prime example of it. The storyline / lines are something that we'll get into, but I feel like I saw the entire movie in this trailer, in all of the trailers. Do you agree with that?
No, because in a way, like, they showed a lot of the action, but it didn't
they
really
all
show
the action,
but they didn't really show the storyline. Like, there were some things that not surprised me, but like I didn't see coming.
I think the only things that they didn't show in this, in their trailers, was the girl getting kidnapped and the locust.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they showed all the good parts. They showed Jeff Goldblum with the fire. Like, that was his iconic moment. And not going to lie, I thought he was going to die there.
Totally thought that.
I thought he was the sacrificial lamb right there. I was shocked that he made it, because he sauntered his way up to a ladder. And then Sam Neill, you know, New Zealander, Sam Neill, I think New Zealand, went out for the save and got him, which was a great moment. But in terms of the story that you mentioned, I like that there were two separate stories to bring the two different generations of Jurassic Park characters together, and then having them work together to solve the common cause, like with Laura Dern investigating the locusts in the field, and with Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt trying to, you know, get their quote-unquote clone daughter back. I thought that that was cool, and I liked that that was the way that brought them to Bison at the end. Bison was just a nerdier version of Ingen, in my opinion. I don't know where I stand with, like, Campbell Scott as Lewis Dodgson. I thought he was, like, a super awkward, like, every time he was on the screen, it made me uncomfortable.
Yeah, there were some parts when, like, he's like, did you have my food? And, like, certain, like, tics that he did, and I'm like, okay, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, he, like, he was super uncomfortable to watch, and, like, acting-wise, fantastic. Campbell Scott did a great job. That character was cringy. It was absolutely cringy. Yeah. And then I thought it was actually, from there, it was very predictable, and the story had a lot of dull moments. I would have liked more dinosaur threats in a movie that is based on dinosaurs, you know what I mean? As well as more dinosaurs in general. I think we saw every single dinosaur battle minus the final one with the Gigantosaurus, the Tyrannosaurus, and mm-hmm. the bird-like, you know, Barakasaurus from Mortal Kombat, that triad. We didn't see that, but we saw everything else. And I was like, you know, I want more. Like, I wish they would have saved the bird with, or the dinosaur with the wings that was swimming. That was a great moment. I wish they would have saved that raptor chase in Malta. I also should have said, get your passport ready, your pop culture passport, Chuck, because we're going to Malta and Italy in this wonderful story. But in general, in terms of this movie, what did you like about the stories, or what did you think about the story?
I like that they used Lewis Dodson because he was in the books, Jurassic World and I'm sorry, Lost World and Jurassic Park. He plays a bigger part. Yeah. And the only thing we saw him was, you know, 5 minutes with Wayne Knight's character, and yeah. they never saw him again. And in Lost World, he actually has a pretty big part. And, you know, I get why they didn't cast the original guy, because he's in prison.
It makes sense.
Yeah. but, and then I like the, you know, he had the Barbasol can.
Like he had all the mementos, right?
Yeah.
Like he was a collector nerd, fanboy mm-hmm. of Jurassic World, who didn't get the credit and then wanted to, you know, piggyback off of John Hammond after that.
Yeah. And Biosyn plays a big part in the book, and they've never mentioned Biosyn in any of the movies. And this story was a lot different because, like, if you look at a lot of the movies, Jurassic World, Jurassic Park, I'm sorry, Jurassic Park, Lost World, Jurassic Park 3, and Jurassic
Greatest
World.
Greatest of the franchise.
They're all kind of similar. Like, they're on the island trying to escape. And every single one, like, they're similar, but also, you know, they tweak a little bit. This is completely different than anything they've ever done in a trilogy. They've been on multiple continents and had multiple storylines that didn't take place at the same time. So True. it was a lot different than any, and I liked it, but I think some core fans, you know, were disappointed with it. And
yeah, I mean, I'm a dinosaur whore, right? Yeah. So like you show there are dinosaurs on the screen and I'm going to be in it. Jurassic, like that IP gets me. Like I love Jurassic Park 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a great movie.
Yeah. At one point I, you know, wanted to be a paleontologist and I was like, oh, can't afford that. So right into nonprofits. And it got to a point where in this movie, I feel like they showed all the dinosaurs they wanted in the beginning. And then we were just stuck on, in Italy for a while. Wait. And I think what would have been a better, I guess what I'm saying is what could have made this movie better is that they spent more time with the dinosaurs on the other continents. Like we just got glimpses of like Chris Pratt on a horse chasing down a dinosaur. Like, and I feel like they rushed the black market stuff. Like that could have been, that could be a series, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like I would like Colin Trevorrow and Omar Sy to have a series. You can throw DeWanda Wise in there because she was great. But I feel like where they lost me on this was it was more about like Biosyn's mission to save the world by ruining it.
Yeah.
And like the rescue missions that we saw, like we saw half of it. Like we saw in the trailer that Beta was saved, but we didn't know that the little girl was kidnapped, which was, I think that was a good little wrinkle. But besides that, like, I felt like it was just missing something for me. I liked it too. I just didn't love it.
And that's the thing, like, it's so different than every other one. Because like I said, like, first one, you're on the island trying to survive. Second one, you're on the island, another island, you're trying to survive. Third one, you're on the island trying to survive. Fourth one, you're on the island trying to survive. Like, they're all kind of similar to where this one was more of a globetrotting adventure.
But, like, three stops, though.
Yeah, but you're still, like, you're not
in Colorado, Malta, and Italy.
Yeah, but you're not on a centralized area. You know what I mean? Like, you're, you know, and showed them traveling with the pilot and all that. Like, it was different. And I think that's where a lot of people got lost because they were like, I want to see more dinosaurs. And I did too. But because of them traveling from here to there and like the rescue mission and all that, we didn't get to see as many dinosaurs as we have in the past movies.
Yeah, we spent so much time indoors. Like once they got the bison, that was it. And like all the dinosaur scenes were like so quick. And we kind of went this way when, well, I don't even remember what movie it was, but you know, the T-Rex was, like, in San Francisco. What was that?
It was San Diego, and that was Jurassic Park.
Lost World, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, we've seen the whole dinosaurs on the continents, like, Fallen Kingdom, we've seen that, where they were roaming free. I think I went into this movie just looking at it as this was a roundup mission to get the apex predators off of the world because the dinosaurs are taking over the world, not Bison, who probably should have been introduced in Jurassic World, the beginning, to set them up as the villain. Not Bison being like, okay, we're going to kill all the crops with bugs, with giant locusts, and then we just need to clone a woman, and then we're going to be fine. Like, I feel like they skipped over so much storytelling and just to kind of fit, like, Bison from Michael Crichton's books into the movie. And I think that that's where they lost me. And, like, they did have a lot of dinosaurs. Like, we did get to see, like, the different periods of dinosaurs. And I thought that was great. That was a great transition. And I talked about that in, like, a little preview that we did. But I felt like this movie, out of all the Jurassic movies, had the most dull parts. And I was like, what is happening? Like, all the one-liners were cheesy. Like, we knew Alan and Claire. Not Claire. Alan and what's her name? Jesus. Why can't I remember her name?
I can't. I don't know Lauren Dern's character, but I can't. Ellie.
Ellie. Yeah. We knew Alan and Ellie were going to get together. Like, we knew all this stuff was going to happen, and we knew Beta was going to be saved. I just felt like they could have ramped up the action a little more for the finale. Like, this is the final chapter of a global IP, like one of the most popular IPs from the 90s, game changing in terms of special effects. Like, if you don't know what I'm talking about, like, I know you do, but whoever's listening, go to Netflix, watch The Movies That Made Us, and watch the Jurassic Park one, and it'll blow you away on what they did. And Spielberg did a fantastic job, and I think Trevorrow has done a really good job with this franchise, but I think he should have just been like, I'm just gonna blow my load and make a huge movie. And I don't think he made a big spectacle movie. I think he made a bookend storyline where it was like, all right, we brought them together, bing, bang, boom, we're done. And that's my problem. Again, I didn't really like the, as we move into the things that we didn't like, I didn't really like the locust storyline. I felt like that was just a reason to get Ellie into it. And
yeah.
It could have been, I think it could have been done better where Sam Neill's Alan Grant is doing his paleontology dig and, like, he recognizes something wrong with the behavior of the dinosaurs and he leaves his isolatory, like, environment and searches out Ellie, who became, like, this world-renowned paleontologist, scientist, whatever, seeks him out, her out, who then has the contact to Jeff Goldblum. I thought that would have been the better way, instead of saying, like, we're just going to ruin some farms in Texas. Because, locust, really?
It came out of nowhere. Like,
yeah, it was stupid.
Like, it really just, like, you know, they're in Texas, the kids are, you know, doing their thing, and then all of a sudden you look, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, what are these? And then I see it, and I was like, wait, now we have prehistoric bugs? Like,
yeah, like, You're having a movie where the main species is dinosaurs, right?
Yeah.
Why couldn't the dinosaurs be the thing that was killing the crops because they were eating them? Like feral hogs are doing in the South, right? They're destroying crops and fields. Like, why couldn't that be the precursor to be like, okay, we need to do something about these dinosaurs. There's this place in Italy. Bison is trying to work on it. And then we uncover that, you know, Bison's doing all this genetic mutation and they're making apex predators and they're going bigger, which I don't even think that line was uttered in the movie, but it was uttered in the trailer, unless I missed it. But I understand why the locusts were there because it was a reason to get Laura Dern involved. But I think that they spent way too much time explaining why the locusts were important. We knew that without food, we don't survive. If our food doesn't have food, we don't survive. So yeah. They spent like 35 minutes discussing how important the locusts are. And B.D. Wong with his bowl cut. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, just get to the dinosaurs. Get to the point. Like, we know Bison's bad. Like, boom, bing, bang, boom. Get to it.
I thought he was going to die at the end. I was like, they're not going to save him. They're just going to be like, here.
Honestly, thought he should have, but he's important. He's the lesser of two evils in that scenario because, you know, our Bison boy, he was definitely terrible. What did you like, dislike? Was there anything that you disliked in this?
Yeah. They retcon Maisie's story.
Yeah, they really did, didn't they?
I hated that. Like, I really thought it was kind of cool in the second one when they were like, she's a clone. Yeah. Like, they had the technology to do, you know, basically cloning dinosaurs. And, you know, I like the story of Lockwood's, his daughter died. So he missed her so much. And that's why the falling out between Lockwood and John Hammond. Like,
yeah.
I thought that was a good storyline. And then, you know, even in the beginning of this movie, she's like, I'm not human. I'm a clone. And then, like, to me, that was, gave her purpose. You know what I mean? Because she was like, I'm not a person. And
yeah.
Then they were like, oh, yeah, by the way, you're real. Your mom.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, wait, what? Like, it almost, and he wrote treatments for both movies. But it kind of reminded me what they did with Rey and her parents in Star Wars.
Yeah.
And Colin Trevorrow was producers on both movies. And it kind of seems like that. Like, in Star Wars, Rey was like, oh, your parents don't matter. You don't matter. And then all of a sudden, in Rise of Skywalker, it's like, oh, by the way, your parents do matter. He was the son of Palpatine.
And yeah, like, do you think that, like, maybe it gets to a point where, like, the writers are saying, this is where we're going to go with it, and Trevorrow can't navigate that given the time that he's allotted from the studio? Because, like, it kind of, like, I understand where you're coming from wholeheartedly, but it also seems like a studio thing. Like, how are we going to explain that this girl's a clone in 2 hours and whatever minutes and still include the dinosaurs, and Jeff Goldblum has to have, you know, 25 minutes of just being Jeff Goldblum? It felt like the studios were like, don't make this smarter than it has to be. Make this an ending. Tell a good story and make an ending. But instead, they said, you got to make it about the locust, not the girl. Yeah. Like, I feel like that would have been the better, like, screw all the locust stuff. You got a clone girl who's kidnapped quickly because she doesn't listen like every other teenager. Gets kidnapped, and that could have been your storyline. Rescue mission, bop, 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 bop. Then you have everything with the old school gang, how they get to bias in. Hell, they could even just been invited to a symposium by Jeff Goldblum's character, or Ramsey could have reached out to him, you know, and that's how they got there. And you'd be like, oh, wait, Owen Grady, I've been studying your studies on raptors, and that's awesome. And they're like, oh, you know, big fan, Dr. Grant, but my daughter, who's a clone, got kidnapped, and they're going to splice her DNA with dinosaurs. And then you're like, oh, shit, let's do this. That could have been your movie, but then they're like, no, we'll just throw locusts in it. So retconning and locusts, two biggest problems.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I had more problem with the retconning than the locusts.
Yeah, the retconning's bad.
Yeah.
But like, you do make a really good point about maybe Colin Trevorrow can't tell a story within the allotted time, and he needs like a Trevorrow cut. Like, maybe his movies are like 3.5 hours long.
Yeah, I don't know. But like I said, he wrote treatments for Star Wars and produced Star Wars. And then, like, I was talking to a guy at work today about it. Like, that really felt like Star Wars all over again. Like, a decent storyline, and thinking they're going to add to it, and then they just completely change it. Like, oh, what happened? Yeah, that doesn't mean anything. And normally they retcon, you know, movies retcon things all the time. Especially now with the, not reboot culture, but we're on continuation culture. You know, when, like, the Chainsaw Massacre, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, when they forget all the other movies except the first one. And then same way with the Halloween. They do Halloween 1, 2, and then forget about everything else until Halloween from a couple years ago. So,
but this one included everything.
And that's the thing that's different. Like, this is a straight sequel. And same thing with the Star Wars. Like, these are sequels. These are not continuations.
Soft sequels.
Yeah. Like, these are straight up, like, you know.
Continuations of an already established franchise.
Yeah. And it just, to me, that loses me. Because it seems, to me, when that happens, it's like, we didn't have confidence in the story in the first place, so we need to change it.
Yeah. Something that I disliked, but I also liked, which is weird. I really, really enjoyed the new cast members that they included, primarily DeWanda Wise as Kayla Watts and Mamadou Athy as Ramsey Cole. I thought that they were great. Every scene that they had, they were important to, and they were important to the story. They weren't Justice Winslow,
yeah,
where he had 10 seconds of screen time, and you're like, oh, I forgot he was in this movie. What I'm disappointed in, and I thought they were going to set it up, is when Jeff Goldblum said, you know, I got 5 kids. And I was thinking Kayla was going to be his kid from The Lost World.
Yeah. And you've said this for a while. It would have been a great
moment. Yeah. Because, like, it just, like, timing wise, it kind of fits. Like,
mm-hmm.
What, late, early 30s?
Yeah.
And she's there. Like, I thought that would have been a great way to reintroduce her. Because the actress who played Jeff Goldblum's daughter in The Lost World was great.
Yeah.
I thought she did really well, and I would have loved for that to be the tie-in, but then I saw the picture on the plane, on the steering wheel of her parents, and I was like, well, that's not Jeff Goldblum. So Kayla is not part of this storyline as a legacy character. She's a new character, which was good. I like the new characters. Neither one of those were throwaway. They were vital to it, especially Kayla, in terms of the escape from the island, but Ramsey was also vital to the escape and the entry to the island. So I thought that was really cool. But my favorite part was what I mentioned earlier, the fact that they explored the different periods of dinosaurs,
mm-hmm.
and went more towards, hey, dinosaurs are closer related to birds than they are reptiles. And I thought that was very cool. And I also liked the black market trade site, all those scenes.
Yeah, that was really cool.
That was might have been the best part of the movie, besides like that crazy, you know, fatality at the end with the Barakosaurus, where it was, you know, it stabbed the Giganosaurus with all its claws. I thought that was cool. But that black market trade site was really cool. And Omar Sy returning, I thought was great. And just like that whole world, I would have loved to spend 40 more minutes in there. You know, and the technology that you can train the raptors, and they're not velociraptors, they were different raptors. You can train them to hunt specific prey. I thought that was amazing. If they decide to make that a series, I am 100% here for it, but I don't think we see the light of day of that. What were some of your favorite parts of this?
I like the training part of the raptors. I thought it was cool. And the girl, and I forget her name, but she was in Alter Carbon. She was in
Dalsha Lockman, or Daishen Lockman.
Yeah, I really like her. So yeah, I thought it was from cool. They
Arrowverse, everything.
Yeah, they added her, and like I like how she just like painted the target with the laser, and then they were just, you know.
And she was like super deceptive about it too. Like when she got Owen at the end, was like, "Boop, you're dead."
Yeah, like. They were like, raise your hands, and then she just kind of like behind her head and was like, dink.
You know, she really is like sparking a really good career for herself.
Yeah.
She plays a great character. Like, she had this, but she's in that Apple Plus show called Severance. She's in Animal Kingdom. She was in Raya the Last Dragon, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Altered Carbon, like you said, Supergirl, where she played Roulette. She's really stringing along a good career for herself. And she's like the, I know the face, not the name. She needs more stuff. We need her in more things. I think she's really good.
Yeah, I like that.
Did you enjoy the throwback kills, like with the spitters when they killed them on the Hyperloop?
Yeah, we haven't seen them since Jurassic World mean Jurassic Park. And I know he was dead. But I would have loved this if they somehow brought back Wayne Knight.
There was a moment where there was a character that, what was his name? He looked like a young Wayne Knight. He played Jeremy Bernier, and it was played by Caleb Herron. There was a moment where he was there, and I was like, is that Wayne Knight's son? Like, does he work for Bison now? Because that would be amazing. But, yeah, Wayne Knight would have been great. Or, like, there was a picture of, like, all the fallen comrades. Like, you know, you had a picture of John Hammond, Wayne Knight, you know, Samuel L. Jackson. Like, everybody that who, quote-unquote, yeah, could have died in the future. I also like the Amber Mine scenes with those, like, yeah, the Lapisauruses with, like, the fans. I thought – I've always liked them, always had those toys. Like those hard plastic toys, and I would always like invade my Lincoln log castle or like cabins I would make with them. I thought that that was cool. I have a question for you. Do you think that just holding your hand up in a stop motion translates to every single dinosaur in the world? Because Owen did that to every single dinosaur and they stopped. And I was like, come on, man.
If I do that, I'd have no hands left.
Right? Like, does that...
I would do it twice, and my hands are gone.
Like, does that translate to bears and cougars, you know, bearded dragons, puppies, you know, bumblebees? Like, can I just be like, stop, and just, like, back away slowly and give them, like, firm eye contact? Because, like, I get it. Like, it worked with Blue Beta, or Blue Alpha, all them raptors, and Blue's your homegirl, and it's got a baby, which is real cool. And, like, I love that. I want more Blue time. Thought Blue was gonna die at some point, and I was really upset going into the movie. But like, let's pretend that that doesn't work anymore, and that these animals are smarter and more deadlier, and they don't understand sign language. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. You train a pod of raptors, or a pack of raptors. It doesn't work on everything, especially not raptors that are controlled by microchips.
Yeah,
and he tried it. And it worked.
Yeah, it did.
So give it up to Chris Pratt, man. If anybody needs to reboot The Dog Whisperer, it needs to be Chris Pratt. Like, he's the next Caesar Milan. Like, just go out there and do your thing with dogs. Here's the big question for you. And I want to know, and I'll share my thoughts here to you. Was this a good ending to such an iconic franchise?
It could have been better.
Likewise.
I wouldn't say it was the worst thing they could have done, but I think it could have been better.
Yeah. I think it gave all the characters that we wanted to see enough screen time.
Yeah, it did.
It didn't kill them, but put them in positions where they could have died, or you thought they were going to die. Again, the Jeff Goldblum part, I gripped the seat. And I was like, they're going to kill Jeff Goldblum, and you don't kill him in anything. He's a national treasure. When Sam Neill went back for the hat, I was like, oh, that's going to be his moment. When Laura Dern was fought, like when they were running through the Locust and all that stuff, they gave everybody a chance. When Claire, who is going through the swamp, I thought that was a great scene.
Yeah.
When she went on like underwater and the dinosaur screamed at her. This does have a very Star Wars feel. So it like the new Star Wars stuff where they like give you characters that you think are important, but they're really not. Like Claire isn't really important to anything at this point.
No, like, not like you know,
she was a love interest who became a character. Like, you know what I mean? Like Bryce Dallas Howard crushes that role, but like at the end of the day, when I look at my top Jurassic World or Jurassic Park actors, you know, top five. Goldblum, Neil, Dern, Wayne Knight, David Attenborough, Richard Attenborough, Samuel L. Jackson, Chris Pratt, Bryce Dallas Howard's not there. Those two kids are up there too, first.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So she, very Star Warsian, forgettable in the scheme of things. Like, you kind of forget that she was there. But again, overall, they should have went all out with this one, told a better story, told the best story possible. And I think they missed their mark. But with that being said, I liked it. Again, didn't love it. Could have been better. I agree with you wholeheartedly again. So let's geek grade this. Now, 71% on Rotten Tomatoes, 78% in terms of fan score. We're fans / critics. I would say we're more critics now because we've done at least 400 hours of podcasting. Where do you stand with this one in terms of our geek grader? Which we know is better than the tomato meter.
I'm going to give it a solid 7.
Ooh, round number, rookie score.
I haven't done that in a very long time.
I know. But, so you're on par with the critics.
Yeah, I just don't think it. How I grade things is did I enjoy it? And I did. Honestly, if they didn't retcon that, I think it would be a lot higher. The retcon with Maisie's storyline, I think it would be a hell of a lot higher. That knocked off a lot of points, in my opinion.
I agree.
And I gave it a solid 7 because I think it deserved it. Like, I don't think it's in the 6s. And if anything, it would be like 7.1, 7.2.
Yeah, well, I'm at a 7.3, so I'm right there with you. And I think it's just because of the dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. Like, again, I'm a sucker for dinosaurs. And if I'm getting more new ones, like the Mosasaurus, where it's like destroying fishermen boats, like, I'm like, oh, that was amazing. And then it's like rubbing up, cuddling with, you know, blue whales at the end. I like that montage at the end where like the dinosaurs are assimilating with the, you know, already terrestrial animals. I was like, oh, that's an amazing moment. Knowing damn well that never gonna happen. No. If the world were to become Jurassic again, that doesn't happen. Horses get wiped out immediately. Deer, blue whales, you got a megalodon. That's going to eat the blue whales in a heartbeat. Come on. They're not looking for tuna and krill. They're going to eat big things. So I'm going 7.3. Dinosaur-wise, yeah, that's what I'm going to give it. So I'm kind of in the middle of it. I don't know, like... This is one of those movies, like, if someone was like, yeah, that's a awful movie, like, I'm not going to defend it and be like, oh, you know, it's a great movie. We'll say it's an okay movie.
It's entertaining.
Yeah, it's a popcorn flick, to steal your term. So that's it for the Jurassic Park franchise. I don't think we'll ever talk about it again unless we're podcasting and it's the 50-year anniversary of Jurassic Park. But before we get out of here, just real briefly, 5 minutes or so, Miss Marvel came out kind of under the radar in the midst of Obi-Wan, what, episode 3 or 4, we get the premiere of Miss Marvel on the exact same day. And you know how we keep saying, like, there's so much stuff coming out? We completely forgot that the Umbrella Academy comes out this upcoming Wednesday. Yeah. So add that to the list of things to watch in the summer that we're never going to be able to watch. But Miss Marvel comes out, spoiler alerts from here, to the credits. What did you think, just briefly, of the premiere of Miss Marvel?
It was a live action in the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, exactly what we were talking about in text.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Dion about it too, and all three of us are kind of on the same point where the background animations and story that's being told through the eyes of Miss Marvel is more intriguing than the actual story.
Yeah, like when they're texting and like he's in the front of the storefront and like an emoji popped up on the neon sign.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool. Like, we're like, are you there? You know what I mean? Like the animation and stuff like that. One, it is not geared towards men in their mid to late 30s.
No.
At all.
No, this is what the CW... shows like Naomi and Supergirl should have been. Like, this is CW is doing Gotham Knights, right? They need to look at Miss Marvel and say, like, if we're gearing it towards tweens, this is it.
Yeah.
Like, this is the demo we want to hit. Miss Marvel is doing it. Did you like that it changed the origin story of Kamala?
I figured they would. Because I didn't know how they were going to integrate the Terrigen Mist.
Yeah. I was really hoping for that scene, though, man. Really, really hoping for that scene. Like, I know you're not a big Kamala Khan fan, but in the comics, she goes into Cocoon, right? And this is the second Terrigen Mist. This isn't Black Bolt and all them. This is the second Terrigen Mist.
It's the A-Day, right?
Yeah. And she has a vision of Carol Danvers, Captain America, Steve Rogers, and Tony Stark. And they tell her that she needs to be a hero when she emerges. And, like, that would have been so, so cool. Whether it was, like, Force Ghost or whatever, like, I think that would have been a great moment. And I know they don't want to rush the Inhumans into it because it's already failed once and they have to bring in the X-Men first. And, you know, this is very kind of on in line with Black Panther and how he got his powers through, you know, family stuff and like the necklace and the tribal fights and all that. Like, she inherits her family or her powers through her mother's side of the family. So maybe we get that they're Inhumans. Maybe she's an Eternal. Maybe this is our first look at the X, like not the X-Men, but mutants. But yeah, what kind of confuses me in all of that is, in terms of this MCU, let's say 616, the universe, we have one person who knows that there is an Inhuman or was an Inhuman alive, and that's Stephen Strange, who is right over the bridge. So could Benedict Cumberbatch cameo in this?
I mean,
possibly.
They all could, you know, like, you know, Peter Parker's still around. You know what I mean? Like, but
that's a trickier contract to get him to do more Disney work, you know?
But what I'm saying is, like, they're in New York. She's a stone throw away from New York, you know?
Yeah. I think Strange would be the best one because she does, like, she has the those type of powers, or even like America Chavez pops in. Like, that could be a fun little team up. Kate Bishop could be a really good team up just because of the age there. I think we do see an Avenger pop up at some point. End credit scene. For those who did not see the end credit scene in the pilot, tune out for a minute because adults are going to be talking. Damage Control's back.
Yes.
And there's a theory out there, and I kind of subscribe to this theory as well, that they may be Skrulls.
Okay.
And the Skrulls are hunting these Inhumans or anybody who has, because it's a, you know, Ms. Marvel, Captain Marvel. Let's assume that Ms. Marvel's mother is a Kree, and that's Kree technology, and the Skrulls are trying to get it. I'm not going to take full credit for that. Dion brought that to me, and I was already thinking similar thoughts about that, but I think that would set up Secret Invasion pretty good.
Yeah, it would.
And I think that's a good way to get the Skrulls in. We know that the Skrulls are still kind of immersed into this universe. But if there's an Avenger to pop in, who would you want it to be? Because I think one shows up for sure. Who do you think it's going to be? Who would you like to see?
I mean, obviously, Captain Marvel.
Because would make sense, right?
The obsession, you know, that she has with Captain Marvel. But I don't know if that's going to happen. I mean, because I don't know, because, you know, the movie's called The Marvels that's coming up, and assumingly that she's going to be in it. So that would make sense if, you know, at the very end of the season, Carol comes in, recruits her or whatever. That would be the most logical person.
Yeah, I mean, you make a hundred, there's no argument there. All of the groundwork, the breadcrumbs have been confirmed that she's going to be in the next Captain Marvel movie. And they're not doing a Captain Marvel movie, like you said, they're doing the Marvels, which maybe they don't trust Brie Larson anymore. They don't like her. After, you know, Tiana Parrish crushed it as Monica in WandaVision and in Doctor Strange. So maybe Lashana Lynch, sorry. They want to move the passing of the torch, right? So you got Captain Marvel, she leaves, you got a new Captain Marvel, and now you got Miss Marvel. And I think that would be the best choice. If I go Dark Horse, it's Doctor Strange, but more importantly, I think it's going to be Carol Danvers with another new haircut. It's got to be like the fifth or sixth haircut. Would it be pretty cool if Jane Foster shows up as Thor? Yeah, absolutely. To kind of segue into Love and Thunder. But I feel like that's just me reaching a little bit. But yeah, I'm going to go with that. And then Sleeper, I'm going to go Sleeper, the Punisher. John Bernthal debuts in Miss Marvel as Kamala's confidant. That's where we're at. So you heard it here first. It's going to be a team up. Miss Marvel joins the Midnight Suns. Ghost Rider will be there. The whole crew. Blade shows up. Big old team up. Moon Knight's there on holiday from London. Oh, it would be cool. Maybe Scarlet Scarab shows up to like with that like that Middle Eastern vibe.
Yeah.
Like, you know, goes in there. That'd be pretty cool. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. Episode 2's out. Episode 3's coming out at some point. You know,
I'm thinking it could be Bruce Banner. He's in New York going to be with his cousin.
Is he in New York or is he in Chicago?
Oh, yeah, wait. Is she in Chicago?
I believe she's in Chicago.
No, never mind.
Or Daredevil. Matt Murdock's around. What a great way to introduce Matt Murdock. But I feel like you're getting... Yeah, reintroduce him, right? Because he's getting his own show. But he's going to be an Echo. We all know that.
Yeah.
It's Captain Marvel. It's Carol Danvers. We know this. We're looking forward to it. Hopefully, it's not episode 6 when it's ending. And you're like, oh, here, come join the team, kid. Like, I like her to be there for... Yeah, I'd like her to be there for at least a full episode, not like an end credit scene, but we'll see. We're going to do a full recap on the whole season in the next coming weeks as this series ends. I know it just started, but you know how this works. Next week, we are going to be breaking down the finale of Obi-Wan. It's already here, Chuck.
Yeah, it's crazy.
2 weeks ago, we did the mid-season review. So we're going to do the end of that. We're also going to talk about our first reactions of The Boys, first few episodes.
Yeah, that's going to be a good talk.
Because we've got some ideas about that. After that, look for an Umbrella Academy episode, possibly a Lightyear episode, depending on if we go to see it. At some point, I'm going to say mid-September, we're going to talk about Morbius.
I still haven't seen it.
Because I think that's the only time we're going to get it. But mid-September, look for our Morbius episode. But that's it, man. We're going to get out of here. Everybody listening, thank you for listening. If you want to follow us on social media, you can. The Active Geek, you can also follow Chuck_ The Active Geek. The Galaxy Wars podcast is not over. We're just on a hiatus due to my busy schedule. We're going to get back to business probably in July. You can listen to me on Cage My IQ. Gym class is coming soon. Chuck has an old podcast on SoundCloud called Box Office Flashback Podcast that you can go and listen to. And that's it, man. We're going to get out of here again. Next week, we're going to talk Obi-Wan Kenobi and The Boys. A mashup I never thought I would utter on this podcast. But here we are. It's 2022. Stranger things have happened. But that's it, man. Again, thank you for listening. Be back here next week for the Active Geek podcast. I am Jim.
I am Chuck.
And we are out.